So I am a full-time chemistry teacher, and someone asked me this morning, so are you nervous? Are you nervous to come and speak? And I got to say, I'm used to speaking in front of a room full of bored, surly teenagers, so you guys have nothing on that, okay? So am I nervous? Yeah, just a little bit, but not a lot. did you have a good Christmas? I hope you did. I hope you had a great Christmas time. We did. We had a very good time at our house. Christmas Eve service was beautiful. It was so wonderful to be here amongst church family, singing about him, singing for him. It was really good to be there. And then, of course, Christmas morning, we still have three kids in our house, grade school age. And so Christmas morning is still really exciting at my house. So long before the sun went up, I was shaken awake. It's Christmas morning. It's Christmas morning. Don't you want to get up? So I rolled over and said, Rusty, the kids won't get up for a couple of hours. Go back to sleep. But eventually they did get up. And the living room disappeared in a blizzard of paper, of wrapping paper and gifts and shouts of joy. And then we sat down and we had a great brunch together and got that all taken care of. And then the rest of the day was this widget and that gadget and trying out this thing and that thing. And there was treats all over the house. There was fudge and there was cookies and there were this treat and that treat. And everybody was snacking all day long. It was just this wonderful day of just really enjoying ourselves. And then finally we sat down for Christmas dinner, and I'd made turkey with all the trimmings, all the good stuff that goes with it, and we sat down at our Christmas table, and I looked around and my family is eating like this. And it's looking around and going, ooh, I think my family has had a little too much Christmas. I think they've had a little too much. So I said, hey, guys, why don't we, before we do the dishes and clean up the kitchen, why don't we all go on out and go for a walk around the neighborhood and look at everybody's lights and look at the Christmas full moon. Did you go out and look at the Christmas full moon? Yeah, it was really gorgeous. So we did. We got up and we went for a walk around the neighborhood, kind of got the blood pumping again before we came back home and dived back into the Christmas spirit, so to speak. And but sitting there at that kitchen table looking at my family, who were picking at the delicious meal that I'd set before them, but they could only just pick at it, I realized, oh, we've had a little too much Christmas. We're a little too full of good things. We've gone over the top of awesomeness. We've surpassed what is really, really good and gone to really, really a little bit too much. Now, don't get me wrong, I love Christmas time. Those of you who really know me know that I do. I love Christmas. I start listening to my Christmas music in October, okay? So I make sure to get it all in. And I love the shopping, and I love the lights, and I love the decorations, and I love the displays and the stores, and I love that everybody's running around and whispering with secrets about things. One of my favorite traditions with my family is usually on the 23rd or sometimes on the 24th, we take them shopping for one another. And we go into the store, and there's three of them, and there's only two of us, so we have to kind of split them up this way, and this one's got to get presents for those two, and it's all in the toy department, right? So we're like going up and down the aisles, and you come around a corner, and oh, no, there's your sister, let's go that way. And so it's like this big episode of Three's Company, right, trying to hide things from one another. And you got your stuff in your cart, and usually it works out okay because it's winter, and you have your stuff in your cart, and you put your coat over it so, you know, your brother or sister doesn't see it, right? We've only been accused of shoplifting once. But this year, today is the first day we've even needed a coat, right? So it was a little bit more chaotic with going around and missing each other. So there's just a lot of traditions about Christmas that I just love. I love the whole thing. But here it is. It's December 27th. And I got to tell you, I am ready to take Christmas and take it in my arms and hug it tight and give it a kiss on the cheek and say goodbye and send it on its way. Bye-bye, Christmas, because I can't miss you if you don't go away, right? So I'm ready to kind of say, okay, Christmas, that was fun, and I loved every minute of it, but oh, I think it's time for you to move along, because I'm ready for January. I am ready to pack away gently and carefully all my beautiful Christmas things and put away the decorations. Because our house, I put out so much Christmas stuff that when we pack it all away, my house looks bigger. Does that happen at your house when you put everything away? Suddenly, your house, it looks bigger. And it looks cleaner and tidier. And I know it's going to look clean and tidy, and I love that feeling of the tidiness of the house. So I think I'm going to make a rule, because it's going to look really tidy once it's all put away. I think I'm going to make a new rule. Starting January 1, we're going to keep the house cleaned up all the time. It's going to be all picked up all the time starting January 1, because we need some order. We need some order around my house, and I need some tidiness. We've been a little out of control last month, and I need it to be tidy. And you know what? Not only that, I am ready for all the sugary goodness and the turkey and the stuffing. Ooh, it's good. Man, I enjoyed it. But I got to tell you, my pants are tight. They're tight. I got to get that out of the house. It is time. I'm ready for January 1st. Because come January 1st, new rule, we're going to eat salad, boiled chicken, and drink water only. Because we need to do what's right and what's healthy for us again. So I'm going to do that. And also, I need to get up and move some more. I do. I need some exercise. So just like everybody else in America, I'm going to go to the gym 5 days a week starting January 1. And I'm going to wear my Fitbit. No, I really mean it, Rusty White. I'm going to wear my Fitbit. I'm going to walk 10,000 steps a day. I'm going to get all those steps in because that's what's good and that's what health is healthy and that's what's right. And I'm going to do it every single day. And I'm going to keep that resolution. And, you know, we've just been out too many nights and having too much fun, too much laughter. We just need to settle down. From now on, I'm going to be in bed asleep by 9 o'clock, which means you kids, 8:30, lights out. That's it, okay? And because it's time. We need some order in the White House. It is time for that. And Rusty White, we got to talk about a budget. Maybe we'll try that Dave Ramsey financial peace thing, okay? All right, because we got to talk about getting it under control and living by some rules. Yeah, that's probably not going to happen, is it? Huh? No, probably not going to happen. But is that... Here we are on December 27th, my friends, and it's this strange time where we're straddling two different worlds because we have December with all of its fun and its celebration and its avarice, and we have on one side, and we're kind of done with the main event. We've kind of reached the pinnacle, and we're coming back down the other side. We're kind of ready to be done with that, but we're not quite at January yet. We're not quite ready for the new year. It's not quite time for the resolutions. It's not quite time to set back the orders and the rules and the regulations and the schedules that are really needed in our life. But I am ready for it. Does anybody else feel kind of halfway between those two worlds? Yeah. So, which one is better? Which one is better? Living life without restraint, with no rules and regulations, like December? Or living life with a tightly controlled regularity and purpose, like the crisp, clean, uncomplicated life of January? Are we better off lawless or lawful? Which one are we better off? I want to talk to you this morning about the law, the biblical law, and what it meant for us as followers of God, and what it means for us as followers, specifically followers of Christ. So we're talking about the law this morning. First of all, what is the law? This is a question with a simple answer, and it's a question with a very complex answer and a deep answer. Steve is beginning a new sermon series on January the 10th, where he's going to be preaching through the Ten Commandments. And so he's going to handle the depth of this question of what is the law. I'm going to let him do that, and we're also going to be talking about it in our small groups, so look forward to that. If you are not in a small group, you really should consider it. It's a great way to build fellowship with people in your church. It's a great way to get deeper in relationship with Christ and with your Christian brothers and sisters, so you should think about that starting anew in January. It could be a resolution, just saying. So Steve's starting that series, but the simple answer about the law is this. In the Old Testament, there was a time in the beginning where man lived in the garden with God. And the law was very, very simple at that point. It was live in the garden, commune with your father. Don't eat from that tree or that tree, but everything else, just enjoy it and love your God. When he comes down to the garden, walk with him, listen to him. That was it. That was the law. But then there came a time when the original sin occurred, and we blew it. Man committed the original sin, and he decided to eat of the fruit that he was told not to. And what was that fruit? It was the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. It was a very specific kind of fruit. And so once consuming that, sinful nature was brought not on only unto that man, but to all of mankind afterward. And so it became necessary for man to be ejected from the garden, because we could no longer have that perfect relationship with our Father. That part was destroyed. And so out of the garden, we were sent into a world full of danger, full of mistrust, full of temptation, and we were ejected into that world. So out there alone in that world with all that danger, we no longer had that perfect relationship with God. That was gone. So in its place, God handed down a written set of laws. In the first five books of the Bible, he handed down to Moses the laws that we were to follow. And this was in place of perfect relationship with God. Here are written instructions as to how you can best do it the right way. So if you follow this, it looks as close to perfect relationship with God as you can get. That's what it will look like if you follow the law. But that's where the law came from, and that's why the law was necessary. Well, what is the purpose of the law? Well, again, there's a simple answer and a deep one, but the basics are this. We had become a fallen people. We had perfect relationship, and we fell and no longer had that right relationship. We had to be told how to do it right at that point. And the law was given to us to show us what that relationship could have been and would have been like. Now, one analogy that I've always liked about the law is that it's like a mirror. Okay, the law is like a mirror. So how is the law like a mirror? Well, the law is like a mirror in that it can be held up to show you and reflect back to you where you are falling short in your fellowship with God. Well, it's kind of like this. If you go and you have a sandwich for lunch and you get a little mustard right here, got a little something right there. Okay, got a little mustard. You won't know it's there until you look in the mirror and you go, oh, I'm soiled. I have to clean that. Okay? So that's what the law does. The law reflects back to you what you should look like, but you don't. So it shows you, hey, you're off base there. You got to clean that up some. Okay? Now, one thing that's interesting to wonder is, well, wait a minute, God, why not just not set down the law and make us guilty of all this stuff? Because if he hadn't set down the law, maybe we wouldn't be guilty. Well, hang on. Let's go back to the mustard on your face. If you don't look in a mirror, does that mean you're not soiled with the mustard? No, that mustard's still there. You're still soiled. But the law, you look and you see your reflection and you go, oh, I got to clean that up. That's not supposed to be there. So that reflection is not showing. Is not your reflection doesn't make you soiled with mustard. It shows you that you're soiled with mustard. The law doesn't make you guilty. The law shows you that you're guilty. Okay? All right. And since the beginning, people have been misunderstanding the law and not applying it the right way and trying to, in our own imperfect earthly way, to get this thing right, but really not getting it right. There's two different ends of the spectrum on how man is misunderstanding and abusing the law. Let me give you both. The first one, we have one side where man has taken the rules and said, okay, God, these are your rules, but how serious are you about this? How literal are you about this, God? We'll call these the December people because they're trying to see how much they can get away with. Okay? For instance, thou shalt not steal. So suppose you just find something. Like, I just found it. I didn't necessarily steal it. I found it in somebody else's house. But I found it. I don't know who it belongs to. So if I take that, is that stealing? Because I don't know who that belongs to. Or how about if whoever has it doesn't know it's going to be gone? Is that really stealing? Or what if they're not using it the way they should? Is that really stealing? Yeah, it's stealing. Totally stealing. But we can get in our heads and we can justify a lot of things. Or thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, wait, how stringent are we on that one, God? Is that like a you can look but don't touch policy with that? Or is that like, can I flirt, but not really in a serious way kind of thing? Don't worry, babe, I only got eyes for you. Okay? Is that what's going on there? Nope, that it's a stricter thing than that. So we have people who try to push the law to its absolute limit. Is that what God intended when he handed down the law? That we would take it and press it to its as far to its borders as we possibly could to get away with as much as we possibly could? Is that what God meant when he gave us the law? No, that's not what God meant when he handed the law down to us. Now, we have this other way to misuse and misunderstand the law. We're going to call these the January people. The other end of the spectrum looks like this. They look at the law and they say, this is the law. It must be kept without wavering. And without question, that's the law. We're not gonna stray from it at all. Okay, and these are the people who we're going to make darn sure that you obey the law too. And if you don't obey the law, they're gonna make sure that you know you're not obeying the law because they're gonna look at you scornfully, like that. Okay, or they'll come to you with Christian concern. I'm concerned, my friend, for I feel you have strayed. Or more often than that, they'll go to their friends with their Christian concern. I'm concerned about our friend. Did you know what she did? I'm concerned, right? And because they know the law, and they know that you're not following the law. And they usually think they are. Okay, these are the January people. They say, we have laws for a reason, and you're breaking a lot of them. God must be very, very unhappy with you. Well, is that why God handed down the law? Did God hand down the law so that we could feel inadequate because we couldn't keep it perfectly? Are we supposed to feel like it's oppressive and holding us down? Is that what God wanted? No, I don't think that's what God wanted either. But we as humans tend to have a tough time with this concept of the law. We tend not to get it right. We tend to misunderstand it. And here's the thing about the law. That God knew when he set it down. He knew that we wouldn't be able to keep it. He knew that we wouldn't get it right. He knew that we couldn't get it right. Once we made that fateful decision of the original sin, there was no turning back. We were fallen. The law shows us what fellowship with God could have been and would have been. But we had fallen away from it. As fallen creatures, no matter how hard we try, we cannot pick our own selves up by following the law. We cannot follow it closely enough to restore fellowship with a God who is not just holy, but holy, holy, holy. We can't hit that mark. He had to do it for us. Where we are imperfect and not capable, he is perfect and he is capable. That's what Christmas is about. Christmas isn't about all those presents and the shopping and the singing and all of that. That's just the celebration of what it really is about. Christmas really is about God making himself fully human and fully divine to fulfill the consequence of the law and become the sacrifice that we all needed. He took the punishment that we deserve. It says in the Bible that Christ came not to abolish the law, but to fulfill the law. So what does that mean, abolish? Abolish means to get rid of, to throw away. So when Christ came down to earth, he said, I didn't come to abolish the law. That means that when he came to earth, even though, hey, Christ died on the cross, we're all free from the consequence, it doesn't mean that he came and made the law not viable or he didn't make it non-existent. The law didn't cease to exist when Christ came down for us. He came to fulfill the law, to fulfill it, which means the law says that this is the way you have a right relationship with God. And we couldn't do it on our own. So Christ came down to make that right relationship whole again. He fulfills the law in that way. So what does that mean for the law for us today as Christians? Okay? How are Christians to respond to the law then? Looking in Colossians chapter 2. I'm going to be looking at Colossians chapter 2. This is 16 through 23. I'll give you 16 through 19 kind of as a preface, but I'm going to camp a little bit on 20 through 23 if you have your Bible. All right, Colossians 2. So don't let anyone condemn you for what you eat or what you drink, or for not celebrating certain holy days or new moon ceremonies or Sabbaths. For these rules are only shadows of the reality yet to come. And Christ himself is that reality. Don't let anyone condemn you by insisting on pious self-denial or the worship of angels, saying that they have had visions about such things. Their sinful minds have made them proud, and they are not connected to Christ, the head of the body. For he holds the whole body together with its joints and its ligaments, and it grows as God nourishes it. Here we are at verse 20. You have died with Christ, and he has set you free from the spiritual powers of this world. So why do you keep on following the rules of the world, such as don't handle, don't taste, don't touch? Such rules are mere human teachings about things that deteriorate as we use them. These rules may seem wise because they require strong devotion, pious self-denial, and severe bodily discipline, but they provide no help in conquering a person's evil desires. So what is this text telling us? What is it saying? Verses 20 and 21 seem to say, hey, you don't have to follow the law at all. Just forget about it. Don't even worry about it. Right? Because they say that because you've died with Christ and been risen again, made a new, brand new, whole creature, you no longer have to worry about the law. Don't worry if somebody tells you you can't, because you can, because you're made whole and new. Christ has made that relationship pure. So is it telling us that, blow off the law, don't even worry about it? Well, no, it's not telling us that exactly. There's something else going on here, and it's really, really important. And verse 23 where we get a really good clue about what it's telling us. It says, these rules may seem wise because they require strong devotion, pious self-denial, and severe bodily discipline, but they provide no help in conquering a person's evil desires. Okay? So what it's saying is this. If you are following the law under your own power and your own strength, okay, then that is completely external. And you are missing the point of the gospel. You're trying to save yourself by behaving well enough and following the law well enough that God's going to be okay with you. That's the pious self-denial part. All right? But where it says they provide no help in conquering a person's evil desires, I can act as right as I want to on the outside. I can look as goody-two-shoes as I want to on the outside, but it doesn't change the fact that I have a sinful nature. I have a sinful heart. I can't change that. And eventually, no matter how self-disciplined and pious I am, I will fall short. We all fall short. So no matter how piously we may believe that we are able to make our own self right with God under our own power, we cannot pick ourselves back up. The entire gospel is centered on the fact that Jesus died and saved us, not that we were good enough to save ourselves. So what this text is saying is, hey, Jesus came to free us from our guilt. So go on and sin however you like. So it's confusing at this point, because what I've essentially told you is God laid down the law that you must follow. Jesus came and saved you from the law so you don't have to follow it anymore, and yet you still should. But wait, why? Well, you should follow it because God laid it down with the original intent not of saving you by following it, but with the original intent of having a right relationship with him. Living by the law as closely as you can still puts you in the best right relationship with your Father that you can get. Let me give you an illustration about that. So you know I'm a chemistry teacher, right? All right. I'm not just a chemistry teacher. I'm a pre-AP and AP chemistry teacher. I take the kids in my room, and I know that they are pointed towards college, and it's my job to prepare them for that fact. Okay? So when they come in, I'm a tough teacher. I'm hard. Okay? One of the things, though, that's not hard in my room is homework. I assign homework every single day. All right? It is worth 10% of my students' grade. But I don't grade it. I collect it. I check it off and give them 100, and I hand it back. So let me ask the youth side of the room, can you see any ways around doing your homework in that method? You could kind of scam me a little bit? Yeah? Yeah? I know this. I totally know this. Okay? Because there's a lot of ways to get around doing your homework. You could copy from someone else. You could put your name on somebody else's paper. You could copy from me, because you want to know something about the homework in Miss White's room? If you walk in my classroom, there's a table by the door. And you know what's on the table? It's a binder full of the keys to the homework. It's laying right there. I leave it out there for my students to come in before and after school, pick it up. Now, they could sit down, and they could write down all the answers to the homework, and they'd turn it in and get their points. They could do that. They also, when class starts, I put that homework key on the under the document camera. And it's up on the overhead, and we go over it together. Do you have any questions? Do you understand why you missed that one? Do you want to change your answer? You got that? They could write down every single thing. Why would I do that? Why in the world would I do that? Because is it my goal as their chemistry teacher to make them do their homework? Is the end goal of the class that they turn in a piece of paper with all the right answers? No. It's not. I know this is a shock to you. It isn't. The end goal of my classroom is that my students learn chemistry. And guess what a great way to learn chemistry is? By doing your homework. So I don't grade the homework because I want my students to take the homework and try the homework and do it right, do it wrong, struggle with it, and come out the other side better at chemistry. And it is hard for sophomores to understand this concept. Their 10th graders are still 15, 16 years old. They still can't quite see, wait, is she serious? Like, you're not going to, like, check it? No, I'm not going to check it. You check it. Then, I mean, I'm going to grade you on the test. Don't worry, I'll get mine. Okay? You grade you on your homework. You look and you see if you understand the chemistry. And when my sophomores have a little room for failure, they're not afraid of getting it wrong. They're doing it to try and see if they know the chemistry instead of doing it to get all the points. Then they're learning chemistry. Back to the law. When God hands down the law, He's not giving it to you so He can grade you on how well you follow it. That's not why He handed down the law. Let me just put you at ease. Your homework is wrong, it's incomplete, and it's late. Okay? But Jesus finished it, corrected it, and turned it in on time for you. You have a 100 in God's eyes. So, sophomores, you don't have to do it at all. Then why do it? Because along the way, you might learn some chemistry. And along the way, you might figure out how to have the best fellowship with God. You might start to feel like you're walking in the garden with Him again. He wants you to know Him and know His character and know who He is. By following the law and understanding the law, even in the times you don't get it right, that's when you know your Father the best. Because once you get rid of the law as an external document, a list of rules that you have to follow, and you take the law and you internalize it, and you let the law be written on your heart, that's when you'll really start to see its true value. So back to December and its parties in January and its resolutions. Maybe there's a better way than the world of extravagance where you are free from the law. And maybe there's a better way than the world of the law and its rigidity where you aren't free at all. Maybe the best way is knowing that while all things are permissible, not all things are beneficial. And maybe the best solution is knowing, not knowing the law as an external document, but knowing the law as it is written on your heart. Not to condemn you, but that it may go well with you, and that you may know your Father's character the best. Because when that law, when you let that law be written on your heart, guess what? The author is in there too. Would you pray with me? Father God, we thank you for your law. We thank you for your desire to bring your children close to you. Forgive us when we fall short. Make us better. Love us when we need you to love us. Love us when we don't feel adequate. Pull us close to you, Lord. I pray, Lord, that we would all know pure fellowship with you, not afraid of you, and not running from you in disobedience. Bring us close to you, Lord. It's in his name we pray.